This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say hosts and also realtors with Oakland Realty in downtown Vancouver. Today, we've got a phenomenal episode. We have Tom Davidoff, Associate Professor Tom Davidoff at the Sauder School of Business.
When I think Tom, I think all things real estate, just one of the best guys to listen to.
Yes.
Right? Like, I feel like he not only has the kind of knowledge and really interesting things to say, but the way he says things, it's always makes for a compelling show.
I'm a huge Tom Davidoff fan.
That's right.
It's great.
We're not alone. We're not alone.
Yeah. And everybody, I think, that listens to our show loves Tom's episodes as well. We always get great feedback. So if you like Tom and you want to reach out, feel free to reach out.
Or share the episode. Share the episode with a friend.
That's even a better idea.
You know what? And we should say, like, we specifically had Tom on. Of course, we do our regular kind of talking points with Tom. But, you know, there's been a lot of zoning changes and Tom has been involved in some of them, totally. As I understand, at the provincial level. So we're talking R11, the change to the RS zoning in Vancouver. We're talking the new policy prescriptions for the province at the NDP level around transit, transit-oriented developments, how that plays out from an economic lens,
right?
With Tom being an economist. And what that does to land values and where the opportunities are. There's a ton going on in today's episode.
Yeah, and we talk about all the regular fare as well. The interest,
what's the market going to do?
Inflation, what the market's going to do. Tom puts his neck out there another time, betting on where the market will be at the end of the year. You don't want to miss what Tom has to say about the market this episode. It's a great conversation. The other thing I just wanted to touch on quickly, next week we are going to dig deep into the zoning with an architect who is actually, she was phenomenal.
Deep in the weeds.
Yeah. And this is
and deep in the weeds in the best sense, like actually unpacking what the zoning means, what she's seeing on the ground.
Right.
And where we go from here.
Yeah. We had Tara Gronlund. She is the principal at an architecture firm called GDP Architecture.
That's right.
And Tara came on. I don't want to say Tara. I messed it up.
No, I know. It was very embarrassing.
Very embarrassing and still thinking about it. God, why'd you say that?
No, but Tara was great, right? So we have kind of a high level from Tom, yes. And then we go deep into the details with Tara. And
Tara talks about the province, what you're going to be able to do, or what we know about zoning changes and the multiplex at the provincial level. Then we dial in on the city of Vancouver, which we have a much better understanding of. What can you do with a lot in Vancouver? What can you build? What's coming? Everything.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Why should you be excited?
Yeah, two-part series.
Yes. And Matt, the other thing I want to mention is we are just back from Dustin Woodhouse's BTBB.
Be the better broker. Be the better broker. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dustin had, I think it's his first conference he's done.
I feel like Dustin was invented for those types of conferences. Yeah.
Oh, was he good?
It was like watching a master at work.
Yeah. It was amazing. Anyways, we were just in Whistler. Got to say, Longhorns really underestimated that place. The après ski is pretty good.
Oh, pretty good, even if you're not skiing. Yeah. I mean, the conference was great too.
It was weird Stephen how Paul we were was skiing, there. But we wore our ski gear. And
no, you have to wear the goggles at Longhorns.
Yeah, at one point you were dancing on the table in goggles.
That's right. It was, things got a little off the charts there. Yeah. It's a couple 40-year-old guys.
Yeah. You spoke entirely the whole afternoon in an accent. I'm not sure why.
You actually had an embarrassing moment where you said to somebody, what part of Australia are you from?
Yeah.
And she said,
England.
England, yeah. Which was very... And you said, oh, you must have been here a while. You're yeah, starting to sound Australian. She wasn't buying it.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the capital of Australia? Whistler. That's the old joke, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. Swing and a miss.
Anyways, it was a lot of fun. Dustin had the, what was the rules? The Chatham House?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, the point is that.
We can't really speak about anything that went on.
We can't really speak about anything that went on. That's our understanding of the rules. You can speak about the content of the conference, but you can't.
Oh, right. I might have even.
Let people know who said it. So does that mean, are we even.
No, I think we can say Stephen Pilatz, former governor of the Bank of Canada, was there.
Right. We also had.
CMHC's economist. We also had CMHC economist Bob Duggan there.
It was awesome.
It was, yeah. I mean, Stephen Pilatz, I got to say, it's crazy how you talk to so many people and you're like, oh man, that guy's next level. This guy's next level. And then he was kind of that next level.
Yeah.
Where, man, what a fantastic talk. And then Dustin and him had kind of a fireside chat that was equally as good. It was crazy.
I read a book review of what is it called? The Age of Uncertainty.
Age of Uncertainty, yeah.
I read a book review where they're like, it's like, your uncle explaining complicated economics at like such a basic level of understanding,
or like to a
soothing,
yeah, like to like a soothing child.
Voice to a child. He's like, but you read that book and apparently you have a much better understanding of really complicated theories.
A lot of the things that are going on, and he outlined all the volatile aspects of our world right now, including demographics, climate change, technological change.
About it.
I wish we could say
signed it
anyway.
Anyway,
it's a great book. And it was a great talk. And thanks, Dustin, for inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. And before we get to today's episode, this week we are sponsored by Scalina Real Estate, which is our real estate company in Vancouver. Today, I want to just mention an awesome listing that we have coming. It's a 2-bed, 2-bath in Mount Pleasant at District, which a lot of people know District.
Love that building.
Awesome thing about District is it's got, like, first of all, this unit is so great. Really great floor plan. Overlooking the courtyard, kind of forever views. Beautiful, beautiful unit. But I should say the rooftop deck at District is amazing too. I was up there today. Sun is shining.
No, I know. You know what? You think if there's any place to be like in July.
It's Longhorns. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But I mean, July on a rooftop,
rooftop,
a common rooftop patio in the main street corridor. It's totally. Like, could you be at a better spot? I don't think so.
I know. It's fantastic. So that's coming
like
to
that
market.
That adds a couple hundred a foot, I would say.
Yeah.
Almost in my mind.
Well, here's the thing. Coming Monday, so check VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where we showcase our featured listings on the podcast site now, which is super exciting.
And it's on that site. It's on Scalina Real Estate. But when you're checking that out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, hit sell with us.
Yes.
Especially if you want your listing featured on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com or your home featured on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But Adam, tell us a little bit about when you hit sell with us, because you get the sold plan.
Yeah, the sold plan. So it's an instant download, our most downloaded document to date. Sold stands for start on launch date. So you pick the day that you want to launch and we give instructions, step-by-step instructions about what to do before you bring your place to market to get top dollar in the shortest amount of time. The guide is there. Download it. Lots of agents, lots of industry people downloading it. Appreciate everybody listening and got some really kind notes about the sold plan.
Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
So without further ado, maybe we should cut to our talk with one of our past guest fan favorites.
This one's like legitimate
Tom
fan favorite, eh? It's just
everybody loves Tom.
You're going to enjoy it. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Tom Davidoff, associate professor at UBC Sauder School of Business, and of course, past guest, fan favorite. Tom, thanks for taking the time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, Tom, maybe for people who have never heard you on the show, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm an economist. I teach in the real estate group at the Sauder School of Business here at UBC. A bit involved with tax and zoning government policy. And happy to be with you to chat about the market.
Fantastic. And we want to definitely do the state of the market conversation that we do all the time with you for sure. But we also want to talk a little bit about the zoning changes that have the city and the province have both introduced. Maybe for listeners who haven't been following along too closely, can you explain what those changes are that the city of Vancouver and the province of BC have introduced?
Sure. So not long after the ABC Council came in, they passed a sort of a part of the Vancouver plan, the larger sort of omnibus city planning framework that was passed by the last council. And part of that was to sort of reshape what used to be single-family zones. It's the majority of the city and a lot of the city south of 16th that is, you know, historically detached single-family homes. You know, 15 years ago or so, laneway homes were allowed and basement suites, I think, before that. Then duplexes became allowed. Well, now we're allowing multiplexes, which can be, instead of increasing the amount of density on a lot. So not only can you build more square footage, but you can cut the square footage into four units on a 33-foot lot. A lot of lots are 33 feet wide, and another common number is 50. So when you get to 50 feet wide, you can do a sixplex. So, you know, that is six separate homes detached, you know, freehold ownership, as opposed to rental only. So a lot more freedom for what homeowners can do. Whether those deals pencil isn't so clear, because the density takes you from something like 0.8 under prior zoning to 1. So, you know, you're increasing by about a quarter how much you can build. The province has been probably more generous. They've released a framework where pretty much every municipality in the province can't have zoning less than about 1.5 floor space ratio, because they're sort of instructing municipalities to allow 50% lot coverage. That is, structures can cover 50% of the lot, and they can be three stories tall. So if you combine those two facts, that takes you to a 1.5 FSR, which is more generous than the city. So it'll be interesting to see if the city says, okay, we're the best place in the province to add square footage because there's the greatest need here as reflected by prices, hopefully the city will get the message and say, well, let's step up to where the province is and go up to 1.5. But so far, the city's at somewhat less density than other jurisdictions, which is a bit weird.
How about homes around the SkyTrain stations and the 20-story buildings?
Yeah, right. So we should talk about that. So the province, in addition to densifying previously single-family areas, also said if you're within some distance of a SkyTrain station, you're allowed to build to much higher density. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but basically, you know, within 200 meters, there's a very high density. It steps down at something like 2 to 4. and then 4 to 8 or 500, you know, some definition, you sort of step down in density as you get a little bit further away from major stations. So those can be big bus intersections, or they can be actual SkyTrain stations, and then you get that extra density. So yes, there will be some single family owners who all of a sudden get upzoned to significantly more density. And then along with that change, there's some changes in the rules for how cities are allowed to extract value from the owners. So the owners probably will see considerable windfalls near the SkyTrain.
I think I know the answer to this, Tom, but in your mind, is this good policy?
Yeah, I think it is a pretty good policy, especially the provincial stepping up to 1.5 FSR. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of people struggling with the ability to find a home. And, you know, single family zoning is a bit like let them eat cake. When Marie Antoinette heard the province, the peasants couldn't afford bread, she said, let them eat cake. And, you know, dealing with a housing affordability crisis with 70% of the land or more in most jurisdictions dedicated to detached single family homes certainly has that flavor. Now, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, you can allow this density. It's not going to change. The buildings that get built won't be affordable. That's true. Hopefully, there'll be some they'll be more affordable than detached homes. And hopefully, there'll be some spillover as you add new apartments that pushes down the prices and rents of older apartments, which become relatively depreciated and subject to more competition.
Tom, how quickly does this move the needle in terms of adding supply?
Well, you know, along with some other measures, for example, you know, rezonings, if they're consistent with the city plan, don't involve a public hearing. The process of getting multifamily housing should get sped up, both because there's more sites where you can build it and because the political process to get it done should be smoother. But right now, as you know, we're staring at, you know, still continued high interest rates, which aren't great for rental projects and aren't great for the price of ownership housing. So, you know, I don't think we're going to see a ton of construction this year, and stuff takes time to get built. So, you know, this is an improvement that starts a couple years down the road before there's any real impact. The impact you might see actually in the short run is, and I don't know how this will play out, I don't think we've seen a giant increase in the single family home prices yet.
Right.
But it's certainly possible that the market for detached homes, especially on large lots subject to this provincial zoning in well-situated suburbs, you know, if you have a tear down on a 70-foot lot in North Van, that might have become quite a bit more attractive in the short run.
So that's where, in terms of cost appreciation, you're expecting to see single family in the next, because yeah, it is interesting. Like there seems like there's been no movement yet, but you're expecting in the next year or two for values to increase fairly dramatically in certain situations.
Well, I should be careful. Yeah. I mean, if you have a tear down on a very large lot within the SkyTrain catchment, I don't think there's any question you're going to see significant value increase. If you have a home that was just, you know, torn down and rebuilt into a fancy single family on a 50-foot lot in a suburb, you know, not near any kind of transit, then, you know, the option to tear that fancy building down and build some new buildings isn't going to be worth much at all. So, you know, the effect of increasing property value because you're able to build more is going to depend on what you can build and how nice the existing property is. I don't think, you know, to my knowledge, that we've seen a big land rush, and the information is already out there to the market. But, you know, some properties certainly will see increases in value. And I've heard anecdotally, you know, the single family market is maybe getting a little bit tighter. You guys would know better than I. But to the extent that's true, that could be builder interest. I just don't know.
Right.
It'll be interesting to watch.
You know, and all the headlines around this policy were, you know, something akin to the death of the single family house, right? We've been talking a lot more about is the death of the duplex. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because like one thing I've been thinking about is, you know, duplexes in Vancouver are really good family properties, right? And it strikes me that a lot of what would have been duplexes will now be smaller units, and we'll go back to that, you know, we're not building anything for families in the city of Vancouver. Do you see that happening?
Yeah, Possibly, you know, on 33-foot lots, I have heard, you know, trying to do the math and the sort of, which I can do okay, the physical layout of the site is challenging. And, you know, you have to put in what a pad-mounted transformer or whatever the word is for hydro. It's not totally obvious to me that the economics are better than doing what builders already know on the 33-foot lots, given the city's zoning. So, and I don't think there's a lot of duplex on the larger lots. So it's not clear to me that the sort of west side or east side 33-foot lot duplex is dead yet. I think that would be a bit premature to announce.
You didn't hear it here first.
We'll see, right? I mean, I think one thing that's likely is as the building community gets familiar with the new regulations and architects come up with creative solutions around whatever constraints are imposed, maybe you start to see more take up of these multiplex options.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I'm just thinking back to the early days of laneways and how now when you look at those, I mean, I guess they've relaxed what you can do with a laneway, but when you look at those early laneways, it's like these are unlivable. And they've really, you know, over a decade, they've really kind of transformed. So I wonder if there's going to be some learning here in the first couple of years. You're going to see some pretty difficult to imagine living in spaces.
It wouldn't surprise me. You know, the province, I believe, is going to release some sort of templates of what might be done under their regulations. I don't know if that'll be applicable under the city's more modest zoning. Hopefully the city will do the same thing rather than, you know, sort of guess what, you know, city planning will accept and then have them tell you guessed wrong. but I don't know how that'll shake out. But I certainly would expect that both in terms of design, like you say, and cost, there'll be some learning by doing.
So maybe the death of the front-back duplex remains, but the death of the side-by-side duplex, I think, is...
Yeah, maybe. The 50-footers.
Tom, just kind of changing gears a little bit, what are your thoughts on the current state of the market? I know we're only a few weeks into the new year here, but any thoughts on the current state?
Well, you know, as usual, Vancouver's real estate market has surprised me to the upside, right? If you told me we'd go through a pandemic that made people not be able to work for a year or have to work in a very compromised situation from home, and then after that, you're going to have like a giant increase in interest rates to levels we haven't seen since the very early 2000s. You know, if you asked me, okay, what's that going to do to home prices? I would have said, well, I think that would be very negative for home prices. But it hasn't been terribly. I don't think stuff is selling for much more than, 10%, 15% in some cases, discount off of where the top of the market was before rates started coming up. So, you know, I think the story is people just aren't selling. And, you know, you didn't want to sell at the peak prices. Why would you want to sell today? And where are you going to move? But the longer people have to pay high interest rates, the more people are graduating because, you know, mortgage loans tend to be five-year terms or less, and some people have variable rates, so and even variable payments. So the longer high interest rates survive, the more owners are going to find it pretty unpleasant to continue to make payments. If you had a condo that you were using for Airbnb purposes, you have the double whammy of higher costs and now having to make lower revenue because a regular rental pays less than a month of Airbnb net of expense, from what I understand. So, you know, you'd think you might see some downward pressure on condo prices. And then on top of that, I guess you have some pre-sales coming to completion, some of which, you know, you might have some people walking away if the deposits were small and the prices haven't come out to where people were hoping they would and or just can't close on a mortgage. So, you know, you'd think there'd be a bunch of pressure, particularly on condo as high rates survive, but I just don't know that the impact has been there in terms of price. I certainly don't see any bargain basement discounts flying off the shelf.
Right. And what are your thoughts on, like, last week, I guess we learned that the inflation numbers were a bit higher than anticipated at 3.4 percent. What are your thoughts on inflation? And do you think we see cuts this year?
Yeah. So let's take one step back. I said, I don't think you see any bargain basement discounts flying off the shelf. And that was kind of a stupid sentence because they wouldn't be flying off the shelf. They wouldn't be discounting that level because the whole point is the market's cold. But we'll let that sleeping dog lie. Let's talk about inflation. So, yeah, you know, I think tomorrow there's an interest rate decision coming and nobody thinks there's going to be a cut. I'd be very surprised to see a rate increase. You know, I lack a crystal ball just like everybody else. But, you know, the bond market still thinks interest rate cuts are coming because long-term yields, I believe, continue to be higher than short-term. So I think we'll see cuts starting to come. But, you know, beating inflation is tough. It requires toughness from central banks, and people have to believe that the central bank is really committed to fighting inflation. I think that's typically viewed as an important part of the fight against inflation. So I don't think there'll be like an immediate capitulation back to 2% interest rates or anything like that. And, you know, they're looking at the globe, you know, maybe I'm prone to pessimism, but there seems like there's a lot of bad things going around. You know, the Hamas's horrendous invasion followed by, you know, well, you know, we don't need to get into, you know, rights and wrongs, but, you know, certainly a very, very large counterattack has led the Houthis in Yemen, maybe at the behest of the Iranians, to start, you know, messing with shipping in that neck of the woods. And that I don't think is very good for prices when you can't get ships through an important passage. You know, there's hot spots all over the world. So, you know, and you know, whether the central bank should see inflation caused by supply shortages as a reason to keep rates high is a complicated macro question. But, you know, my suspicion is until we see inflation back, you know, in the 2-3% range consistently, we're not going to see much by way of rate cuts. So don't know.
Right. Don't know. Right. But is that, you know, going back to your kind of comments on the market and Vancouver surprising to the upside, it does seem like you're still pretty pessimistic in a lot of ways about 2024. Am I getting that right or?
No, I'd say a little more uncertain, right? So, you know, if rates do come down, which is certainly something that is a possibility, right? I mean, suppose rates come down 1% this year, I think there's got to be a lot of pent-up demand, right? Mm-hmm. So, I think there's a lot of itchy trigger fingers that'll come back in as rates start to come down. Because, you know, everybody knows if rates get back into, you know, I don't know, the threes on a fixed, you know, it's going to be a bonanza craziness. So, you know, you have to think people with any liquidity aren't going to wait until rates come all the way down to try and anticipate that jump. So, you know, if interest rates do start coming down, inflation starts to look good, then I think things get very hot. But I do think, though, you know, there's a sort of bucking bronco underneath a lot of condo owners and even owners of a variety of home types. Of continued interest rates, maybe continuing to make payments pretty unattractive. So you'd think supply starts to come online and, you know, people die, people get divorced, and eventually people want to sell. And so, you know, people holding off from selling in a market where buyers don't have the buying power to absorb a lot, you know, you can only hold out so long, you'd think. So in the world where inflation is persistent and rates stay high, I think we could see continued decreases in prices, and those could be significant. I you know, is that a 30% probability? Maybe something like that.
We know you're involved in a lot of the policy discussions, at the very least, that are centered on housing in the province. Is it kind of now understood that supply is fundamentally the issue? Like, is that just a given now? I feel like we've kind of tried everything else. But, you know, thinking about all of the negatives you just pointed out, and that Vancouver's kind of weathered the last 18 to 24 months, you know, pretty well. And, you know, with everything going on, like, is supply just now it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think there's a certain, probably a consensus that there's too much demand for not enough supply. I have seen some commentary that, oh, look, you know, the feds just came to recognize that there's too many foreign students. And so they've just clamped down on that. I'm skeptical. I think, you know, certainly some markets in Toronto were extremely impacted by a very large number of, you know, foreign student visa holders. You know, I don't think that's going to solve all of our problems. I don't think anybody thinks rents are now going to magically become affordable, but it may take some pressure off. So one does see, no, you know, it really is all about demand. But I think most people think, you know, there just aren't enough homes for people. I can't imagine there's anybody who's tried to find a rental home who believes there's enough homes to meet demand. Right. So I'm pretty surprised, right? I mean, certainly in the big picture, right, it used to be 10, 15 years ago, if there's a planning hearing about some kind of development, it would be 100% neighboring homeowners complaining, you know, that, you know, a three-story rental building is devastating to their neighborhood's character. And now it's very much the opposite. There's a lot of pressure on politicians to add supply because of the large millennial generation continuing to struggle to find a place to live.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So Tom, last year was characterized as having historic lows in inventory kind of throughout. Do you think we see more inventory this year? Or what are your thoughts on inventory?
Like I said, I think, you know, when you have suppressed inventory, it's sellers who probably would like to sell, but don't like where the market is. And maybe they talk to a realtor or just think, you know, maybe I'm better off waiting a little bit for demand to pick up, you know, likely when rates fall or, you know, if there's some positive news in the economy. So, you know, when demand's depressed, sellers can hold off, and they do when they have. But you can't hold off forever. Again, you know, people die, people get divorced, people want to, you know, change homes, move to a different city for a job, something like that. And you do have, for investors, more and more people are going to graduate into higher interest rates. So in the world in which rates stay high, probably people have to sell to a greater degree than they did in 2023 this year. And of course, in the world where prices start to tick up, then those sellers who've been waiting for a hotter market, you know, will release. So, you know, we generally see a positive relationship between sales volume and prices. There's more sales that occur in a hot market than in a cold market. But I just don't think you can have low levels of sales forever, even in the high interest rate environment. So that's a very long-winded answer to say, definitely if rates start coming down significantly, I think we'll see more volume. And I kind of think we'll see more volume either way, certainly by the second half of the year.
Tom, maybe thinking a little bit big picture here, how's the economy in Vancouver and British Columbia more generally?
You know, I think we've weathered, as I understand it, employment is doing okay. You know, we haven't seen a big surge in unemployment despite the Federal Reserves around the world looking to slow down economies. So, I think Canada generally, we're sort of flirting with recession. There's certainly been a slowdown, not surprisingly, given the combo of inflation and higher rates. But, you know, we're not into recession here yet. And obviously, you know, skilled trades, there's certainly employment categories where there's still a shortage of labor rather than a shortage of jobs.
Do you think, you know, it was before this conversation, it was my impression that, you know, we're not out of the woods, but the worst is kind of behind us in terms of the last couple of years, especially in the housing market, I guess. But the soft landing or, you know, potential recession is kind of here, rates coming down, things should start picking up again. Is that, I'm starting to you know, revise that thinking based on this conversation that we're maybe not as close to the end as I was thinking. Do I have that right based on what you're seeing?
No. You know, I'm really trying to be pretty agnostic, right? I'm just not sold that, you know, dramatic rate cuts are, you know, it's not a lock that 2024 sees, you know, rate cut after rate cut at meetings, just because, you know, we had that bad read on inflation and, you know, a recession isn't so great for the market either. So, no. You know, the thing that sort of changes central bankers' mind is we get some rate cuts because, you know, there's a lot of job loss. That's not great either. So I do, of course, hope for the soft landing. We all do. And it's certainly not out of the question that that last inflation read was a drag. And again, this global picture, you know, I just can't believe, you know, rocket propelled grenades from, you know, people in developing countries bodes well for the price of commodities,
right?
And goods generally, but you know, I don't know.
Maybe we'll you know, you always are game to stick your neck out, Tom. Where do you think the Bank of Canada is with the rate, overnight rate at the end of the year, end of 2024? Best guess.
You know, I'm gonna say, I think if I had to guess, you know, I'll do it 1% lower at the end of the year than we are today.
Okay.
That seems to be, yeah. Okay.
I was hoping you'd say 1.5, but.
But what does the market say? You know, like we can infer from the yield curve.
I think that you're bang on. It seems like the consensus is a point. 1% down. And what about prices?
CPI? Well, I'm on the hook for some colleagues. If we don't get to within the 2-3% range consistently, I think I'm out $20. So let me try and jawbone everybody into that range again. I think we'll be in the target range.
And Tom, and every year we ask you about home prices. What are your thoughts on what does the market do for 2024?
Well, you know, that's tricky, right? Because these multiplexes should be bad news for townhome and duplex and condo prices because you've got more multifamily supply coming online. But I'm going to bet against foresight on the part of consumers in that way, right? Mm-hmm. Prices should reflect, you know, all the information we have today. And it is very clear that there's a lot of townhome duplex type product. And condo coming on, and of course condo because of the transit-oriented development. But I'm going to bet that, you know, the typical buyer makes decisions based on what inventory is available today, not what inventory they think is going to be available. You do have the pre-sales impact. But I don't think pre-sales are going to impact even the existing market very much. So I'm going to say condo comes down a bit further this year, 2020, start of the year, end of the year, I think rates are down. Let's call it even, Stephen,
For condos.
For most detached. Single family, I think, you know, if people, again, I don't think there's going to be a lot of builders out there necessarily this year with multiplex because rates remain high, but I still think that ought to have some impact along with a bit of a rate recovery. So let's say single family, I'm going to go 7.5 up year over year.
Wow. So just so I have it here, we're going 7.5 up on single family, townhome and condo, you're thinking flat?
Yep.
Okay. Man, that's actually pretty specific.
All right. So you know what that means, everybody? Sell your house and buy a condo.
Buy a condo.
I'm always wrong.
I'm all in on condos.
No, that's great. Well, yeah, we'll have to check in at the end of the year.
What am I okay for the start of the year? Am I at least correct? The condo inventory is a little thicker than single family right now.
You're absolutely right.
You're absolutely right. The one thing that is interesting, and it's kind of yet to be seen, but it does. I think Adam, you'd say the same thing. I feel like I've had more people literally reach out in the last week than I had reach out in the last 6 months of 2023.
Yeah.
So it is, my sense is it's going to be a much busier year. What that means for pricing, who knows, but it does feel like there's a thaw happening right now in the market. That's for sure.
I feel like we're mirroring, and I agree with that, but I feel like we're mirroring 2020.
23, kind of the beginning of 2023 in a lot of ways. Like, I feel like that it's like, feels like that kind of optimism.
Actually, I feel like it actually feels even busier to me.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I'm, you know, and I definitely agree with you, Tom, if there's negative news, I can see everybody going back to the sidelines. So I think, and like even last week, that inflation news was, it definitely put a damper on some spirits. But yeah, it seems like a lot more people are coming back.
I mean, with rate cuts, there's going to be a party, right? I mean, my guess is one, right? So zero is bad. But I mean, if there's 1.5, 2 in cuts, right? If rates were anywhere near where we were, you know, a couple of years ago, that's why it's just so surprising. I know people can avoid selling, but it's just surprising to me that we saw rates go up as high as they have without more downside on prices. Because I don't think anybody believes that we wouldn't see a very large increase in prices with rates coming back anywhere near where they were.
And the only other thing we've been talking about is investors seem to be coming back. Yeah, which is surprising because last year it seemed like they'd completely left the market. So,
yeah, it does feel like there's a new renewed optimism. Even though, you know, I guess maybe there's a slightly more certainty, although not around rates, but not like you're saying, the global situation's pretty. I don't know if it gets much more uncertain when it comes to the geopolitical risk.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a year ago, hyperinflation, right, wasn't ruled out. You know, you could have gotten into a terrible tailspin of high interest rates, you know, rate increases. People didn't know that. That doesn't seem likely to be on the table today, for sure.
Tom, we got the quick segment, The Five Wire. Do you have time for that?
Sure.
All right. The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
One book that you'd recommend for our listeners?
Boy, I'm going to go with The Years by Annie Ernaux, memoir of a French woman, you know, born just after the war. So, you know, about my mom's age. So nice in that way. I'd read it in the original French if you could. I read it in English and, you know, I would have been challenged to do the French. But I feel like she kind of had a French author vibe to her. It called back reading stuff from high school, you know, just in tone, even though I was reading it in English. So I'm going to guess it's Les Années by Annie Ernaux. So that's going to be my book recommendation.
And is it, just so I understand, it's a memoir of kind of post-war French woman's life?
That's right. And it's sort of like, you know, like that Billy Joel song, you know, we can't stop the, we didn't start the fire, whatever, you know, it's sort of like, you know, a lot of riffing short form, but then she gets a little bit more autobiographical, but she sort of just, it's a largely her listing the things you lived through if you were a leftist French woman born in the 1940s. So, you know, they say that the good thing about fiction is it gives you empathy. And I think this was a good example of like getting inside somebody else's head. So I liked that. That was for a book club. And, you know, some people are going to be disappointed in that one when they actually read it. It's like, why did Tom recommend this? There's not even any characters in it. But, you know, it had, I'm going to call it a double win because I like nonfiction because I like to learn stuff about the world when I read. And it had the bonus of, you know, getting really some empathy for this woman, you know, like just a different person from who I am with a totally different set of experiences. So I like that.
Interesting. Okay.
Tom, in the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has improved your life?
That's a good one. You know, trying to take my time seriously, you know, be respectful of other people's time, my own time, try to spend time wisely. You know, not waste time. I think that's, you know, we're only dancing on this earth for a short while, as they say. So, you know, try to make the most of time. Not that I live it, but certainly it's on my mind.
Fantastic. Speaking of wasting time, over the holidays, did you binge watch anything or have a favorite movie?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So again, you're going to have to bear with me. Oh, yeah. Well, I watched The Bear with my wife. And, you know, I liked season one better than season two, but there are a couple of excellent episodes in season two.
Interesting.
That Richie character is really compelling and actually reminds me quite a bit of a colleague of mine. So liked it a lot.
Wow. I actually thought most people were fans of season two over season one.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with that. Season one, see, I think season, you know, do you want to show me or do you want to tell me, right? I want you to show me
right.
As a general matter. And like the intensity of that kitchen, you know, you sort of got a sense of why people were behaving the way they were. Just this first season, all I remember is just the total bananas chaos in the
and the frenetic pace. It was, yeah.
And then what I didn't like is I felt like a lot of season two is, let me now explain to you the exact history of how I arrived at my behavior in season one. The other thing I didn't like was, you know, I think The Bear is like a great show full of insight. You know, it's not The Sopranos and it's not The Wire, but, you know, it's that level of depth of characters and really amazing cinematography. You know, it's just like real, it's art. And then in the middle of this artful show breaks out the hallmark story of a guy and a girl, right? That girlfriend character, not taking anything away from the actress, you know, she's,
right.
You know, I think she's quite good, but, you know, she looks and behaves. They put her in the warm, cozy sweaters and, you know, she's like not, you know, she's a doctor and yet she's not uptight. You know, it's like this absurd, ridiculous, you know, character, so patient and loving and, you know, just like this perfection and you know, their courtship or whatever. It just felt like the Hallmark Channel, you know, Christmas special in the middle of great art. And so didn't like that aspect of season two one little bit. But the best of season two is very, very good.
Yeah, Forks, I think, is the episode. Is that the...
Exactly. Forks is just a great episode. Completely agree.
Favorite band or music that you're listening to? I think,
or YouTube. Something on YouTube you can direct our listeners to.
Fat Joe might have been the biggest audience feedback we've ever had, that recommendation. So,
what was the good recommendation?
Yours was Fat Joe, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, we had like, about a dozen people reach out on that. So,
you know, I feel like as I spend too much time on YouTube, I'm going to make more of a prediction than, put my foot down. But I feel like I'm seeing a lot of like Toto fandom and not Africa, you know, like Hold the Line and Rosanna, I'm seeing a lot of love for. So, a band full of studio musicians, right? Like, what's his name? Porcaro, the drummer, and then Steve Luthaker, who did guitar on Running with the Night, you know, and I think like Beat It or something like that, you know. So I think maybe a lot of people are going to say this is the year they rediscover Toto and the porn stash and the very, very high quality musicianship.
Fantastic. And last question for you, Tom, something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life lately.
You know, it was just my wife's birthday and I got her a paddle board, which is something she's wanted. You know, I'm not a big spender on anything, but I'm hopeful that this really is a positive impact on the, you know, maybe I'll get to use it sometimes, but I just hope, it makes for a happier household.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, Tom, for taking the time. And is there anything that you're working on that you want to share or plug?
Continuing to do work, looking at the impacts of new housing supply on neighboring properties. And, the project isn't complete, so I'm not going to come down on one side or the other. But that's a really interesting question. You know, people say all the time, well, you know, new homes are not affordable, so let's not bother building market rate housing if you're not building social housing or deeply subsidized housing geared towards low incomes. And it's just, you know, you're ruining the skyline with no benefit. And the question is, you know, my instinct is to disagree, but it is interesting to ask, you know, are you just providing homes for affluent yuppies when you build this missing middle stuff? Or towers near transit, or when you build that and you absorb yuppie demand, does that filter into more affordability in the units vacated by the people who move into those units. And that's an empirical question largely, and it's a difficult one to answer, but we're in the midst of it on several dimensions.
Fantastic. Are you still on Twitter, or formerly known as Twitter?
Well, you know, I to the extent, you know, I don't want to call it that other letter of the alphabet, but I am trying to be an ex-Twitter user. I mean, my feed, the thing is, I wanted to go to, you know, Blue Sky or whatever, but like there's no fights about zoning there, so it's boring. Like, yeah. I don't need it. You know, it's like everybody, oh, I really enjoyed this left-leaning article about U.S. politics. Well, yeah, no kidding. We all do. But that's not who I'm here to fight with. So I like Twitter and that, but it's not, now it's not fights about land use. I don't know about you guys, but it's fights. Like, yeah. Half of my feed is like pictures of people hitting each other.
Yeah.
Let's face it, they're pretty compelling. So I think it's just going to get worse and worse. So I'm trying to get, like, just this very morning, I was like, Tom, no Twitter, none.
It is amazing how I've kind of stopped using it as well. And it, when I go back, it is actually quite a bit worse, right? Like, it seems like it's totally gotten ruined. But, anyway, so
you know,
not
done by Musk, by the way, because, you know, like the one, you know, I don't need to get into politics too much, but I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump. But the genius the guy has is like pitching to the lowest common denominator tends to be a very good idea. And so, like, you know, celebrity, naked stuff, people fighting, I think, you know, that's what sells tickets. And so, you know, if Musk is trying to recoup some of his money, you know, really bad stuff that people, you know, that your mother wouldn't want you looking at is probably what he should be populating Twitter with.
All right. Well, maybe we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for your time, Tom. As usual, super insightful conversation, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you both so much. Have a great beginning of the year. And for your sake and for your colleagues' sake, I hope the volume is there this year.
Thank you very much. Us too.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with UBC professor, Sauder School of Business, Tom Davidoff.
The five wire, eh? I could do like the five wire. I bet Tom would have a different answer every week.
I feel like if there's, you know, that old, was it a beer ad where it was like the most interesting guy in the world? Or was that a beer ad? Remember the guy with the beard?
Oh, the, was that?
It was like Dos Equis. It was the Dos Equis. I feel like they, like when I think of the most interesting guy in the world, it's always
Tom Davidoff.
I just see a photo of Tom.
That's a
very, no, but he's a very interesting guy.
He's not anything like the Dos Equis guy.
I know. No, not that he looks like the Dos Equis guy, but talk about an interesting dinner party. Tom at the table.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He's an interesting guy.
Also really funny. Always have a good laugh when Tom's around. So no, appreciate him coming on the show. Interesting insights. You know, we've had Tom on the program now, like consistently for 8 years.
Yeah, I know.
And I got to say, we're getting a lot more out of this relationship than Tom is.
No kidding.
But yeah, we appreciate him. We got to do something nice for Tom at some point. But we appreciate him coming on a few times a year and never afraid to put his neck out there and always happy to kind of explain what's going on in the BC economy and, of course, in real estate in Vancouver. And he's involved. He's at the table for a lot of these things.
No, he's at the provincial level. He's one of those guys. It's theory, but it's in theory and practice.
And it makes me, it reminds me that we should be reaching out to Professor Andrei Pavlov as well to get him on the show, because I know a lot of people will be interested.
Dueling in banjos take. There. Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. What else do we have, Adam, before we cut for the day? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. You can see the synopsis of our discussion with Tom Davidoff there, as well as any other past episode. We have the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast living on our site as well. We also have, is it Help with Buyers or Buy with Us? There's buttons on there. And what it gives you access to, Adam, is private client services.
Yeah, Matt, because if you are not using PCS, you're standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips. Just head over, click Buy with Us. You'll get your free account for private client services. Again, this is listings management software. It's you're going to be seeing new listings when they hit the market. You could put them in your favorites folder. In real time, it's going to show you what they sold for. It gives you all realtor level information. It's the best way to search for real estate in Vancouver. You can also use the mapping system, which is really cool.
Hey, but I don't know.
I mean, honestly, I've tried everything online. I still go back to PCS. We use it ourselves to monitor markets, and it's just an easy way to do things. There's no better time to have it.
No kidding, because it's an interesting moment in the market, start of February. And you said you were having a tough time.
Yeah.
We should have led with this, but you were legitimately, there used to be a guy in our office where every day or two he'd come in and go, I was up negotiating a deal till 2 a.m. last night. I'm so
tired.
You
wondered, who is
like, how come I'm never negotiating deals at 2 a.m.? But you were actually negotiating a deal.
At not quite 2 a.m., but for some reason, just sometimes you never know how it's going to play out. But what I thought I'd be doing at 7 o'clock last night somehow turned into, started the process around 9 o'clock.
It's always good.
Anyways, we got it accepted, but at, I think, around midnight.
Multiple offers on one of our listings.
Yeah, and here's the thing, or pretty close to midnight. Then, you know, I go upstairs and it's almost like when you get home from beer league hockey.
I was going to say the adrenaline's pumping.
You're a little bit like, I'm lying there and I'm like, I can't believe it. Cause usually I'm in bed by about 9:30.
Yeah.
So this is, you know, I'm up late, but then
you're
it's
hopped
almost
up.
Like, I'm almost like one of my kids when they're overtired.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm like, oh, now I'm hooped. So I'm lying in bed. I can't sleep. Next thing you know,
you're bouncing
like,
around.
Yeah.
What? Rolling around.
Pardon? next thing I know, it's like almost 1 o'clock. And yeah. Anyways, I get to sleep. Baby wakes up at 3 a.m. Got to get a bottle for myself. Just kidding.
I don't drink bottles.
So anyways, get up at, you know, 5 a.m., start my day. And I've slept probably about 4 hours. So I don't know. Had a meeting this morning, just
killed it.
If I don't have
crushed it,
yeah, almost crushed a nap in the car before. But I gotta say, I don't really function that well. And one of the things, just to bring it back to the Woodhouse BTBB, smart, he had a little gift bag for everybody.
Oh,
at
yeah,
the conference. A couple things he put in there. One is eye masks, for people to improve their sleep. I've been wearing mine. It's pretty, otherwise,
really?
Yeah, with the exception of last night, it's pretty good.
Earplugs?
I don't do the earplugs, but he put
Oh, no, you would not do the earplugs because you got
to
hear.
I have to hear.
Kids.
Yeah, I have to hear, yeah.
Anyway, if you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
We also, of course, got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Have a great week. And we're back here next week.
We're back here talking zoning.
Yeah. And this is, again, this is a deep dive into the new provincial
and
municipal
zoning changes. Everybody wants to know, and we finally got somebody who knows what they're talking about. It's great.
It's going to be a great episode. So we'll see you next week.
2000 Faces for Radio.
Subscribe today.